This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
It is enormous. It is one of the biggest humanitarian crises in the world. Over 10 million people in need of humanitarian assistance. And within the health sector, we're targeting about 5.8 million people. The rates of death amongst children in some areas are four times above what we would call the humanitarian threshold.
That's Dr. Richard Brennan, Director for Emergency Operations for the World Health Organization. He's commenting on the humanitarian crisis in northeast Nigeria and the Lake Chad region. Also in Pretoria, South Africa today, police fired stun grenades, rubber bullets, water cannons, and arrested about 150 people in a wave of anti-immigrant protests. IOM reports a surge in the number of migrant deaths on the Mediterranean Sea's central in the first 2 months of the year, and the FAO predicts that Zimbabwe will be the country hardest hit by the invasion of army worms. We'll have these stories and more. Stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. The crisis in northeastern Nigeria and the Lake Chad region is the focus of today's Emergency Humanitarian Summit in Oslo. At the summit, the United Nations announced a new $1 billion appeal to respond to the terrible effects of the Boko Haram insurgency. Donors pledged most of that amount today, promising more than $670 million in humanitarian aid. Nigerian Foreign Minister Geoffrey Onyema estimates 26 million people in the region have been affected by Boko Haram. About 20,000 people have been killed since the militants began their attacks in 2009. There is widespread displacement and food shortages, and famine-like conditions are reported in some makeshift camps for the displaced. Aid agencies are just gaining access to many areas. Dr. Richard Brennan is Director for Emergency Operations for the World Health Organization and is attending the summit. From the Norwegian capital, he spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua about the scope of the crisis.
It is enormous. It is one of the biggest humanitarian crises in the world. Over 10 million people in need of humanitarian assistance. And within the health sector, we're targeting about 5.8 million people. The rates of death amongst children in some areas are four times above what we would call the humanitarian threshold. That's almost unheard of in the last 15 to 20 years in most humanitarian crises. We've had major outbreaks of polio. In fact, the global program to eradicate polio is being threatened by the crisis in northern Nigeria. We've also had a big outbreak of measles, which can be life-threatening amongst children who are malnourished. There's a huge problem with malnutrition and access to food in the north. And in some areas, about 20% of children are acutely malnourished, which can be a life-threatening condition. And we've also recently done a survey of over 700 health facilities and found that 60% of them are not functioning. So whatever way you cut it, we've got a huge crisis. And currently, the resources to address those needs are out of proportion to its scale.
Can you say whether the situation is worse in northeastern Nigeria or in the Lake Chad region?
In terms of numbers, about 80% of the people in need of assistance are in northern Nigeria. But you're right, the problem flows over the border into the other Lake Chad countries, Niger, Cameroon, and Chad. But the majority of the need is in northeastern Nigeria.
Now, you took part in a discussion today at the Humanitarian Summit on sustainable health response in emergencies. How can you have a sustainable response in this situation?
Now, it's a great question, and it's a thorny one. So the first priority is to save lives. And when you've got a health system that's not functioning, like I described, 60% of health facilities not working, health workers not being there, drugs not being available, we really do some very, very basic things. We run what are called mobile clinics, and we target the hard-to-reach, most vulnerable populations through these mobile clinics. We basically put medical teams into cars and try to reach as many communities as we can. But that's not a sustainable solution, and it's not a cost-efficient solution. One of the big problems is the security situation. I mean, there's a conflict going on up there. But as the conflict settles down, as the situation becomes more stable, we have to change our tack very, very quickly. Shift from the mobile clinics to try to reactivate those primary healthcare services. We'll be running mobile clinics for a long time, but we want to progressively reactivate those health services. And then as we do that, we hope that that will form the foundation for a longer-term health system recovery. That's going to be dependent on a complex range of other issues, funding, political support, and resources.
Now, you're the WHO's Director for Emergency Operations. Just how many emergency operations are you now involved in?
47. From Syria to Yemen to Somalia to South Sudan. We have a recent outbreak in Sao Tome Principe in the Atlantic Ocean. We're responding to emergencies due to conflict, due to drought and malnutrition, due to infectious disease outbreaks, and recently natural disasters as well.
How can you possibly not be stretched so thin at this stage?
Well, the whole international humanitarian system has never been so overloaded and overstretched. And you're right, we are. We don't have quite the bandwidth that we need. Well, frankly, anywhere near the bandwidth we need to address that huge scale of need. Right now, there are 125 million people worldwide needing humanitarian assistance. There are 65 million people who have been forced from their homes because of conflict. And these are the highest numbers on record. At the same time, we estimate we need over $20 billion this year just to provide basic humanitarian aid, food, water, shelter, sanitation, healthcare.
Can any of these problems be solved completely without political solutions?
No, they cannot. All the ones that I've mentioned today, be it northern Nigeria, Syria, Yemen, South Sudan, Somalia, Congo, these are all political and developmental crises. There's no humanitarian answer to the underlying causes of those problems. We can save lives, but the answers ultimately are political, and they're also related to investing in people and integral human development. They're not ultimately humanitarian answers.
Dr. Richard Brennan is the World Health Organization's Director for Emergency Operations. From Oslo, he spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua. In Pretoria, South Africa, police fired stun grenades, rubber bullets, and water cannons at protesters today and arrested about 150 people. This as the latest wave of anti-immigrant protests broke out in the country's capital. President Jacob Zuma condemned the anti-foreigner violence and appealed for calm. VOA correspondent Anita Powell is covering today's developments and spoke with me about the anti-immigrant march and what triggered it.
Residents of a Pretoria area called Mamelodi said that they were going to march against foreigners today. They didn't initially get permission from the police to do so, but then it appeared at the last minute they did. Now, the estimates for how many people showed up, it varies. Authorities initially said in the dozens. Then police said later that they arrested about 150 people. So it appears that a few hundred people showed up on this short march through the center of Pretoria, the capital.
What led up to today's protests?
The most recent thing that maybe sparked the protest is in December, the mayor of Johannesburg made some comments about foreign residents of Johannesburg. He equated them to criminals. He said he was going to clean them out. Comments like this. He was sharply rebuked for these comments, but clearly people listened and people remembered them. And that led to, earlier this week, some unrest in a few other Pretoria neighborhoods, where shops owned by foreign nationals were looted, were destroyed, people were chased away. But xenophobia is not new in South Africa. Even since 1994, when South Africa became democratic and more immigrants began to settle here, there have been big problems in South Africa with inequality, with poverty, with high unemployment. And these issues have persisted. And some people in South Africa feel it's much easier to point the blame at foreign nationals. The evidence doesn't back this up. The unemployment rate has stayed unacceptably high. It's now around 30% for more than two decades. And so you can't blame foreign nationals for something like that when they've only been in this country for that long. It's a very complex problem, but really what it ties to is that there are still serious problems in South Africa's economy that just haven't been addressed.
I understand there are a number of businesses that are run by Somalis, Ethiopians, and others that have often been the targets of anti-foreigner protests. So what is their side of the story? What are they saying about this?
you know, it depends, of course, on the individual, but it is common in certain parts of South African cities to find a number of shops that are owned by foreign nationals. There are several reasons for this, they say. I spoke to a number of them earlier this week, and they pointed out that South Africa's immigration laws are quite strict. It's very difficult as a foreign national to get access to credit, to get access to even simple bank accounts, to get access to a tax ID. So you can't actually participate always in the formal economy if you are an immigrant. It's also very difficult to get a permit in South Africa. It's just a notoriously inefficient process. And so many immigrants tell me that they feel like they have no choice but to participate in these sort of gray economic zones, owning small shops, providing services.
I understand that some of these business owners were even out there with the protesters this morning trying to defend themselves and their businesses.
There were members of the immigrant community who did protest at the protest, and things honestly got ugly. There were a number of Somali immigrants who were carrying rocks, who said, you know, we are prepared to die, who were very upset by this spate of anti-immigrant violence. And that did lead the police to intervene and to fire tear gas, rubber bullets, and water cannons at the protesters and to make more than 100 arrests. So it was not a pretty scene in Pretoria this morning.
What is the mood right now? I understand the president has appealed for calm as well as the Home Affairs Minister. So is there calm right now?
Right now, the police say that they have the situation under control. How long will that last? It's hard to say. It's also worth noting that it's the end of the month. Many South Africans get paid around the 25th or on the last day of the month. And so as a result, there are a lot of people who are kind of close to the end of their monthly paycheck, to the end of their February paycheck, who on a Friday night might be upset, might not have a lot of money, and that might incite people. And that has nothing to do with foreign nationals so much as it has to do with the prevailing mood in some of these areas.
That's VOA correspondent Anita Powell in Johannesburg, South Africa. Also, the rights group Amnesty International has released a statement saying South African authorities have largely failed to address the outbreak of xenophobic crimes that has been seen in the country since at least 2008 and bring those responsible to justice. It says failure to act sends a worrisome message that such acts are tolerated by the authorities. Meanwhile, thousands of Zimbabweans living in South Africa are reportedly anxious over anti-migrant sentiment and occasional xenophobic violence. Reporter Kuzayi Zvinavashi spoke to some Zimbabweans about the problem.
In the past few days, South Africa has witnessed violent cases of xenophobia against foreigners as a build-up to the expected protests. Ngobizita Sibanda is a Zimbabwean based in Mamelodi, a township in Pretoria where violence has taken place. He says the situation is tense.
I'm illegally residing in Mamelodi. Of late, there have been rumors and signs that there are going to be xenophobic attacks. Some Nigerians have been attacked. It first happened in Johannesburg, then happened in Pretoria West. The calls for a march against illegal immigrants intensified. These people, they say they are going to attack the immigrants because they're taking their jobs.
Supporters of the protests have been mobilizing for the past month on social media and other platforms. Sibanda says some companies that hire immigrants have been targeted.
They named ShopRite, Spar, okay, and some other supermarkets as their targets. But of lately, it has come to surface that these people will not only be targeting those people that are working, but we think everyone is going to be attacked. Every foreigner is going to be attacked.
Economic collapse and political violence has led many Zimbabweans to move to South Africa illegally over the decades. Political analyst Kudakwashe Musasiwa explains why so many Zimbabweans have crossed the border.
I believe the reason why we have so many young Zimbabweans, the reason why they all serving in bars, in restaurants in South Africa right now, getting attacked by these xenophobic idiots, is because our fathers have failed. There is no jobs for us. 95% of us are unemployed anyway. The reason why we're all in South Africa right now is because our fathers failed us. They failed us dismally.
Victor Kucherera is Youth Assembly President for a political party called Freedom Justice Coalition Zimbabwe and is currently based in South Africa.
For some of us, we are very scared to be in South Africa, but there's nothing that we can do because we cannot go back to Zimbabwe and starve. So we just have to dodge bullets every now and then. What can we do? Because there are no jobs in Zimbabwe.
Sivanda says many foreigners are thinking about how best to survive any potential attacks.
We're just praying that we stay safe and no one is get harmed. And because some of the Zimbabweans and the Nigerians are calling other immigrants, that they're not going to lay down and let this guy beat them. They're going to fight back. So it's sort of going to be intense. I just wish it doesn't happen.
Some foreign-owned shops have closed for business, fearing looting during any potential attacks. Millions of South Africans are unemployed, and people accuse foreigners of taking jobs. Some observers say the tensions will likely continue until economic growth across Africa improves and fewer people seek refuge in South Africa. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. Past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. In Pretoria, South Africa today, police fired stun grenades, rubber bullets, water cannons, and arrested about 150 people in the wave of anti-immigrant protest. And the crisis in northeastern Nigeria and the Lake Chad region is the focus of today's emergency humanitarian summit in Oslo, Norway. For more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. The International Organization for Migration reports a surge in the number of migrant deaths on the Mediterranean Sea's central route linking Libya to Italy in the first 2 months of the year. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from IOM headquarters in Geneva.
The International Organization for Migration estimates 326 migrants and refugees have died this year while transiting by sea from Libya to Italy, compared to just 97 fatalities during the same period last year. While the numbers are alarming, IOM spokesman Joel Millman says they do not reflect the full scope of the sea tragedies, as many bodies are never recovered and an unknown number of victims remain missing. He says most of the victims are migrants from sub-Saharan Africa. However, he tells VOA that not everyone making the perilous sea journey in smugglers' boats is a migrant who intended to go to Europe.
There's a thriving business in kidnapping right now in Libya where people are being taken off the street, held to paid ransom, and then forced into these boats just because the ransom takers are done with them and they don't want to try to pick them up again and go through the long process of trying to wring a few hundred euros out of a family somewhere thousands of miles to the south.
Millman says that is not the only horrendous crime being perpetrated against the defenseless people. He says human smugglers have been employing another potentially lethal tactic. He says smugglers have been stealing engines from the boats and leaving the vessels drifting in the water with people aboard.
They don't know whether this is a mafia that's cracking down on competition that isn't paying them and punishing them by taking the engine, or whether it could be a mixture of both. Parts and vessels are so hard to come by now with the amount of migrants that are coming through that the smugglers just feel they need to recover the expensive parts of their operation, you know, the components, as quickly as they can.
Millman says passengers are promised that a rescue ship is on its way. He says in many cases that has happened. But there have been other instances where the migrants have been left adrift without any help on the horizon. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The first OSWAN International Women's Film Festival is underway. It features more than 30 films and runs through February 26th. Noria Tesson has the story from OSWAN, Egypt.
The sounds of Upper Egypt herald the opening of the first OSWAN International Women's Film Festival. Girls and boys in colorful clothing swirl and dance. or play their musical instruments. The southern city of Aswan celebrates life among palm trees and monuments along the Nile. The festival focuses on women filmmakers and women's issues worldwide. Their films display their concerns and denounce women being the victims of marginalization and violence. A new campaign called The White Ribbon is being launched to raise awareness about violence against women. Organizers hope Egyptians will wear a ribbon of white lace as a sign of support. One of the participants, the Italian artist Rosetta Messori, thinks that Aswan, which is more conservative than the rest of the country, is the perfect place to promote women's rights. It is very important to organize a film festival on women issues, especially in Aswan. I think women have today a great creative potential, and indeed, Aswan seems the perfect starting point to rebuild and return strength to the Egyptian women. The festival happens at the same time as the Abu Simbel Sun Festival, during which the sun's rays falls on the statue of Pharaoh Ramses II. The timing of the festival was selected to make use of this biannual event. It attracts many people to Aswan when Egypt is promoting tourism after the years of unrest that followed the Egyptian uprising in 2011. 31 films from 20 different countries are in competition in this first edition of the festival. One of the members of the jury, the Chinese filmmaker Jani, says how women have been gaining strength and equality in her country and that this can happen in Egypt too. In my opinion, there are no difference being a woman in the film industry in China nowadays. To me, being a woman even gives you some advantages because you can use that power, your femininity, your special point of view, so I feel quite free. But in Egypt, human rights organizations like the Arabian Network for Human Rights Information say freedom of expression has been shrinking under the current regime. That, plus Egypt being a patriarchal society, make it more difficult for women's cultural lives to thrive. In some regions, the literacy rate reaches 41%. According to the Women's National Council, in the south of the country, around 80% of the female children don't go to school. The first Aswan International Women's Film Festival has honored Egyptian actress Nahla Fakhti. For Voice of America, this is Nuria Tesson from Aswan.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Curtis Bynum, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hello, Mambo! This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. This Sunday, treat your ears to a luscious hour of African music. From new, fresh, hot airway hip-hop to Tuareg rock and roll to island fusion of the Seychelles, I've got it for you! Plus, in this edition, live music and interviews with amazing artists from Zanzibar's 2017 Sauti za Busara Festival. All this and more just for you, peeps. So tune in this Sunday, 1500 and 2000 UTC, right here with me, Heather, on Music Time in Africa.